This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Just this. I mean, this session next week, we should be back to our normal schedule of starting half an hour after Shabbos is out. I'm going to continue along the lines of last week, where we started discussing the whole question of people having feelings which are not right. And in these various discussions that we're going to have over the coming weeks, we're going to be doing two things, and that is, number one, discussing the concept of having feelings which are not right, in general. What does that mean, and how does one overcome it? How does one handle those feelings? And number two, we'll be taking various specific examples, as we did last week, and analyzing, are those feelings correct or aren't they? Things which on the surface seem so right, and when one looks at them carefully, they're not right. One of those concepts, one of those feelings that people often have and which sound very righteous and might be very righteous, we need to analyze it. You'll often hear a person say, I don't care what people think of me, I do what's right. And people are usually very impressed with that. And you'll find that many popular authors have made millions of dollars or rands or pounds out of that theme, where the hero doesn't care what they think of him, he does what's right, and that's it. In fact, that is the theme of many, many, many novels. The conflict created by the hero wanting to do that which is right, and the fear of repercussions in society. To what extent is that right? And how do we handle that feeling and that concept altogether? In this week's Sedra, we're told that the Nesiim, the heads of each Shevet, at the end of the giving of all the gifts to the Mishkan, they brought the precious stones of the Avnei Miluim, the special stones that went into the Ephod and the Choshen. Their gift, their donation is listed last, after all the other donations, all the donations which on the surface would appear to be much more simple donations. And various reasons are given for that. In fact, Rashi brings the well-known Chazal, Omer Rabbi Nosson, Ma roch nesim lis nadev b'chanukah samizbeach b'tchilo v'mleches ha-mishkan lo yitnadvu b'tchilo. Why was it that when it came to the donating for the mizbeach, for the first use of the altar in the new mishkan, they were the first there, they were the first with their donations. However, when it came to the constructing of the mishkan, the parasha of today, they were the last. They actually brought their donation last, and that's why they listed last. Elokach omru nesim. This is what the nesim said. Isnadvu tzibur mashem isnadvi. Let the community donate whatever they can. Umashem echatsim anu mashlim inoise. And we undertake that whatever is lacking, we will fulfill. On the surface, that's a wonderful donation. They're not specifying, they're not giving anything defined, they're simply saying that everybody have their chance to give, whatever is missing we will give. It's an open-ended commitment. That maybe if people won't give anything at all, then we'll give everything. If people will give a little bit, we'll give the rest. Whatever there is to give that is lacking, at the end of the donations, we will fulfill. It's a fantastic donation. Imagine that a Rosh Yeshiva goes to see a wealthy person about a donation. So you'll have one man says, right, it's 100 rand, another man says 1,000 rand, another man 10,000 rand, all wonderful things. But imagine a man says, look, go to everybody else, go around your normal rounds, when you're finished come back to me and tell me what your year's budget is, and whatever the difference is between what you made and your year's budget, that I'll pay. So can there be any more wonderful donation than that? And that's what the Nesiim said over here too. We will fill the gap created by any losses that are left after the people have made their donations. Kivan Shishlimu Tzibur Zakol, once the Tzibur had done everything, they gave, the donations were far beyond anything that was expected. They gave everything that was missing. Amru Nasim Ma'alin Lasis. The Nasim caught a fright. They said, what's left for us? We waited till last because we thought there would be a lot for us to do. When we now look around, we see that it's all done already. What's there for us? Heviyu is Avnei Ashram. So they brought the one thing which the community couldn't afford. The precious stones. That they couldn't afford. Therefore, they, when it came to the Mizbeach, they gave first. That was also no small donation. We were just looking at the Gemara early on, where the Gemara tells the story of this man who had the required stone. The Beis HaMikdash was missing a stone for the ephod, and they went to him, they wanted to get the stone from him, and they were prepared to offer him a profit of 600,000 dinarim. A dinar is probably something like a Kruger rand. So they were prepared to cover his cost for the stone and pay another 600,000 dinarim. It was an incredibly valuable stone that they were after, and something which couldn't be found anywhere. If that's what the Chachamim were prepared to pay for it, that must have been its market value. Otherwise they would have bought it elsewhere for less. So one sees what the Nesiim gave. Each one gave a stone, the value of which was, in those days, worth millions, literally millions. And sure, that the community couldn't do. So they gave what the community couldn't give. Then Rashi says a strange thing. And since they were lazy in the beginning, a letter is missing, Mishman, from their name. It says Nesiim, it's printed here, and the Torah is written without a Yud. The Yud is missing. The Yud was removed from their name because of the atzlonus, because of the laziness, which is unbelievable. What was the laziness? Their gesture was a wonderful gesture. They didn't make the gesture out of laziness, they made the gesture out of generosity. We'll underwrite, whatever's missing we'll pay. It didn't enter their minds that maybe the community would do it all. So they knew they would have to give the stones, and more they thought they would have to give. In the end they only give the stones, only. Each one a million, between the 12 of them, 12 million rands worth of precious stones. Some little donation. Where's that clothes? Where do we see the laziness? What's lazy about that? And yet Chazal points out that there's something that wasn't right. There's also a case of a feeling which even people as great as the Nesiim had. And it's criticized, it's not 100% correct, it's not right. We'll discuss, we'll explain that Chazal too in the process. What is in a name? We talk about the Nesiim, the name, the Nesiim, the title, Nesiim is printed without a Yud. How terrible is it? Is that a terrible thing? What do they suffer? It was afterwards, it was later, it's clear to everybody what it says, everybody can read it clearly. So their name is written without a Yud. How serious is that? We see that it is serious because there are various different chazals when Avram changed Sarai's name to Sarah, changed the Yud with a Hey. The Yud cried to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And said, what's with me now? Where am I going to feature? And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, don't worry, there'll come a time when Moshe will change Hoshea's name to Yehoshua and he'll use you for that. You've got a place, don't worry. So we see, and we can't understand exactly what that means, but we see that there is a relevance in these things and in the way that the name is spelt. And here too, it seems a terrible punishment that Nesiim is spelt without the Yud. And that's really the subject of this shiur. What is in a name? How important is a name? There is a Ramban on last week's Sedra, which applies equally to this week's Sedra. Last week we learnt, Ra'ei, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ra'ei, see, Korosi b'shem, I've called by name, Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'matzei Yehuda. Betzalel, son of Uri, the son of Chur, of the tribe of Yehuda. And this week we have a similar pasuk where Moshe says to the Bnei Israel, see, God called by name, Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'matzei Yehuda. The Ramban is worried about this pasuk. What would you say is worrying the Ramban? What word of the pasuk is worrying the Ramban? Ra'ei korosi b'shem Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'matzei Yehuda. What's the difficult word? What's the difficult word b'shem? Sorry, it's redundant. Okay, that's a little bit.
So people go, why it goes right, why it traces them back? So the Chazal talk about that. That's still not what the Ramban is worried about. Re'u, re'ei, see what? What did you see? What do you mean see? So what do you have to see? There's nothing to see. Just say Karasi b'shem, Tala ben Uri ben Chul, Mata Yehuda. What's the re'ei? What does re'ei imply? And if you do look, you'll see what? What will you see? Something. You'll see something. There's something there. Let's see. Well, so that's what's worrying the Ramban. The Ramban says basically, and you should learn this Ramban when you've got a time moment. The Ramban says that it was a miracle. It was a miracle that a man like Bezalel existed. Firstly, he says, where would these people who've been slaves for over 200 years, where would there be among them somebody who knows how to, who's an artist? Who had time to practice the skills and develop the talents of an artist? It's not shy. And furthermore, he says, when a nation has been busy for 200 years doing menial labor, like busy with cement and bricks and sand, that's not conducive to artistic development. So even if there was somebody with artistic talent, he wouldn't have survived that kind of occupation for those many years. And even if somebody did survive and somebody was able and somebody did have that talent, even an artist who all his life had been busy mixing cement and sand and doing all these coarse things would lose his artistic ability. He wouldn't have been able to retain it. And even if you would say that an artist was able to retain it, so he might know how to do in gold work or silver work, but somebody like Bezalel, who's full of chokhmah and tvuno and da'at, he's an intellectual, u'bechol melocha, he knows how to, he's artistic in all mediums. Lachashov machashovis, he can plan and he can design. Lachashov bezov of a kesef of a nechoshes, he can work in gold, he can work in silver, he can work in copper, and he can work in stone, and in wood. Where do we find an artist so versatile? Never mind one who comes from a people who've been slaves for the last 200 years. That's a miracle. So that's not possible. So he calls Moshe Rabbeinu and he says to Moshe, see. Shiyireh ha-pele hazeh, so that he should see the miracle. No, to see. It's a strange thing that very often we don't see. There are things that we don't see. We only see physical objects. But miracles, which are as dramatic very often, we don't see. Unless it involves something very material. He says, Shiyireh ha-pele hazeh, look at this amazing thing, he says to Moshe. I want you to see the amazing thing. The Yeda, and he should know, Moshe should know, that God miraculously gave Bezalel all his talents. Ladas Kolele, to know all this. Why? Bavu Shiyase Amishkan. He gave it to Bezalel in order that Bezalel should build a Mishkan. Long ago, the Ribbono Shel Olam decided he wanted a Mishkan in the desert. And he created Bezalel in his honor. He created Bezalel to build the Mishkan. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam plans and calls out the generations Meirosh from the beginning. From a long time ago already, the Ribbono Shel Olam decides who's going to be when in order to do the various things that need to be done. As it says, before you were even created, before you were formed in the womb, Yedaticha, I knew you. You existed before then already, I knew you. And before you're born, I've already set you aside and sanctified. And in this kind of loshon, the same use of the word ra'ei is used in the posuk further back in Shemos, Ru'u ki Hashem nosan lechem ha-shabbos. See that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given you Shabbos, and that's why he's given you double non on Friday. What does he mean? See, where can you see that Hashem has given them Shabbos? You can see from the double non on Friday. If you look at the miracle of Friday, you'll understand that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given you Shabbos. You can see it physically. You can actually see the Shabbos by the double non on Friday. Such a miracle. Every Friday comes the double non. That shows you that the Ribbono Shel Olam has created Shabbos. What is the Ramban saying? Let's do a little bit more of the Ramban and then you'll see. Ul Rabbeinu Bezeh Medrash. And Chazal have a medrash on this concept, and they say, "Hero oisoi sifroi shel odom harishon."
He showed him something. He said, "Hey, look!" So obviously, God was showing him something. So the way that Ramban has learned it now is he was showing him the miracle. He was showing him. This is unusual. You've got to notice the miracle. The Chazal say he showed him the Sefer of Odom Arishun, the book of Odom Arishun, and he showed Moshe Rabbeinu that every person who will ever be born was planned already. The family tree existed in the times of Odom Arishun already. Everybody's name, including our own, is all there, all planned exactly who's going to be what.
And if you look, you'll see that even Betalel's name is there. Thousands of years ago already, Betalel's name appears. Shneimar says, "Ra'ei karasi b'shem Betalel." See, look, I've called Betalel. That Betalel that's written there hundreds of years ago. V'hu ki inyan shepirashi. That's as I've explained.
What does the Ramban mean? The Ramban means that the name of a person exists independently of the person, and it in fact pre-exists the person. The name of the person exists before the person. What does that mean? What is a name? Before a child can say the word mother, when the mother leaves the child believes that the mother is gone forever. That's why the child cries. Later on, the child cries because the child is pained by the separation. But in the earlier stages, before the child can actually say mother or father, when the child sees the parent go, the parent is gone. The child has no way, while in the parent's absence, to relate to the parent. Not possible for the child to do so. Parent's gone, dead, finished. When the parent comes again, it's a new business. Parents back, reborn. That's what the child believes. And in between, the relationship doesn't exist. Which is also why, to many mothers' consternation, the crying stops as soon as the mother's gone. The child cries bitterly, the child wails as the mother drives off, and the moment the mother's out of sight, the child stops. Why? Because the mother's gone. There's no more mourning. The child is incapable of mourning because the child is incapable of relating to the mother. Because the child doesn't have the intellectual means of doing so. Until the child can conceive of the mother as a concept and has the name, the word, mother. Then the child can continue to relate to the mother even when the mother isn't in front of him. And that's why the word shame is used. Name, shame comes from the word sham. Sham means there. You can point at it. So there are two ways you can point at something. Either when the thing stands in front of you, or if you have a name for the thing, if you can define the thing, you can point at it even when it's not in front of you. A human being is capable of conceiving of concepts intellectually even when they're not there. He can conceive of concepts that he's never even seen. He can learn about things that he's never actually physically seen. And he can work with the ideas, and he can build with the ideas, and he can create with the ideas, he can invent, he can discover without ever seeing. Scientists can work with and determine the behavior of electrons and neutrons and protons and even smaller things than that. Things they've never seen. How do they? And they can tell you exactly how they work. This one affects this one in this way, and if you do this, this is what happens. No, you never saw it. Doesn't matter. Once you've defined it, once you know that it exists, and you have a definition for it, the definition takes in what it is in every sense, they can start working with it already. You don't have to be able to see it. It doesn't matter. A shame, a name, is something much more than a description for a person or a label for a person. A name is the person. That is what the person is. Not just a person, an object too. When we give a shame in Hebrew is also a noun. A noun, a Hebrew noun, is not a description of the article, it is the article. That's what it is. And the name existed before the article did. Before the world was created, the Hebrew language existed. So the word Shulchan existed before there was a table in the whole world. How could it exist before there was a table? Because the name exists independently of the thing. The name can exist as a concept. Later on, the Ribbono Shel Olam made the things to fit the names. But long before that, the concepts were already there. Betzalel existed centuries, millennium before he was created. It doesn't matter. Betzalel was there as a concept. He was created in thought. He was created as a being, as a conceptual being. He was created already at the time of Odom Arishon. When his time came to be created physically, then the man to fit the name was created. But the name is created first.
We do that too in a way when we give people titles. Make a person a managing director, make a person a professor, make a person a sir or a lord. The title exists long before. Now you're just saying you belong to that name. You can use that name now, it applies to you. But it isn't, we didn't just make the name now for you. We're not calling you a professor because, oh, we looked at you and we thought, my goodness, this is a professor. That's not how it is. The term professor existed long ago, and we have now included you in that name. We've made you one of them. We've made you a professor. That's how it works. So we do that with various things ourselves. We have to understand that in everything, that's how the Ribbono Shel Olam did it.
In fact, there's a very interesting Malbim at the beginning of Bereishis when it says that God brought all the animals to Adam to see what he will call them.
I think it says, and whatever Adam would call them, that was the name. And the Malbim discusses how was Hebrew first learned by Adam HaRishon. I'll now prove that the Hebrew was the language, Lashon HaKodesh was the language that was spoken from the beginning. Adam used to speak Hebrew, but how did he learn it? Did the Ribbono Shel Olam sit down and teach him Hebrew from the beginning, in which would have been a very miraculous thing, but feasible? And if so, what method did he use? Did he take Adam on the first day and teach him the whole Hebrew language and say, now a lion is called an Aryeh, and a buck is called a Tzvi, and the table is called a Shulchan, and a man is called an Ish? Is that what he did? Not possible, because then Adam would have said that. But what is a lion? What do you mean an Aryeh? What does he look like? So the Ribbono Shel Olam would have started to describe, well, he's got two ears and he's got a nose and he walks on four legs and he's got a bit of a mane around him. Okay. And a shor is an ox. What is an ox? It's got two ears and two eyes and two nose and four legs. And what's the difference between an ox and a lion? And then go on to the other animals. It would be impossible. There's no way you could teach anybody the Hebrew language or any language that way.
Then the other alternative is that the Ribbono Shel Olam took Adam on a guided tour of the world and said, that is an Aryeh, and that is a Tzvi, and that is an Ayal, and that is a Yonah, and that is an Eitz. That's how he taught it. That's what the Malbim means, that you're just magnifying the miracle. It means it would have gone on and on and on. It would have taken a long time with each thing. God would have had to communicate with him each time he saw something new and tell him what it was. This was another way. Everything had a name already before it was created. When we call a lion an Aryeh, that's not because some clever man gave it that name. It was called an Aryeh before he was even created. The concept of an Aryeh existed. The concept of a Tzvi existed. Each thing had its concept long before it was created. The question was, how would Adam know that the concept of Aryeh ties to that thing? So the Ribbono Shel Olam implanted in Adam such deep perception that he would see these animals and immediately understand them to the full, and would give them the same name that the Ribbono Shel Olam had given them. It would be so inherently correct. The name is so accurate that provided you can see the Brio, provided you can see the creation with full perception, you would also give the right names automatically. The Midrash Tanchuma says a human being has three names. He has the name that his parents give him. It's one name, one shame. He has the name that society gives him. It's another name. And he has the name which he is koine, the name which he acquires himself throughout his lifetime. And the greatest name of all is the last one. That's the greatest name. What does that mean? A parent gives a child a name. It's written in various forum that along the same lines as the Malbim explains Adam giving the names to the animals. But the parent has Siyata Dishmaya to look at the child and see so deeply into the child that the name the parent gives the child is accurate. That is the child. But what is it? What does it mean that is the child? The parent is giving the name to the child in terms of the child's potential, because that's all we can know at that time. This is a Moshe, and this is a Yankel. Each child gives the child a name. That's the child's potential. Society gives a person a name. Usually it's a title. The society will call him professor or mister or doctor, whatever it is. That's the name that society gives him, his status, his professional status. The name he acquires for himself is called the Shem Tov. The name he acquires for himself is not a particular name. Tzadik, Chosid, not like that. But a Shem Tov. But generally when you mention his name to people say, ooh, fantastic. That's all they have to say. That you can see from their reactions to his name that he has a Shem Tov. That's the third type of name. And the Tanchuma says that name is greater than any of the others. Once we understand the principle that a name is not a description of the person, and the name is not something that is given to a person, but a name is the person, we'll be able to understand a very difficult medrash, and then a few things will become clear. The medrash goes on the same posuk it's brought, on the same posuk of Ru'u, I've called by the name of Bezalel. The Chazal get very excited with this posuk, and they go into this whole medrash, which really has its place in Kohelet, and it's based on a posuk in Kohelet. Tov Shem Mishem En Tov. A good name is better than good oil. That's what Kohelet says. What does it mean? And the Medrash explains why a good name is better than good oil. The Medrash gives a list of reasons. Let's look at them. Shem En Tov Yoreid V'Shem Tov Oile. When you pour oil, it drops, gravity pulls it down, but when a person's got a good name, it goes up. It's weird. That's what it says. Shem En Tov L'Shata V'Shem Tov L'Oile. A good name is good oil is only for a period of time, and a good name is forever. Shem En Tov Kalo V'Shem Tov Eino Kalo. Shem En Tov, good oil, it finishes, it ends. A good name doesn't. Shem En Tov Bedamim, you've got to buy good oil, you don't get it for nothing. V'Shem Tov Bechinim, a good name you get for nothing. Shem En Tov Noig Bechaim, V'Shem Tov Noig Bechaim of a Meitim. Good oil applies to living people only. A good name to living and dead. Shem En Tov Ba'ashirim, V'Shem Tov Ba'aniyim of Ashirim. Good oil is with rich people only, you've got to have money for it. Good oil is wealthy and poor. Good name is with wealthy and poor. Shem En Tov Ma'alech Mikitun the Tracking, V'Shem Tov Ha'alech Misof Elam Vat Sofer. Good oil, if it has a pleasant smell, how far does the pleasantness of that smell travel? So from the entrance of the palace into the palace a little way. That's as far as it will go. Shem En Tov, a good name, it travels from one end of the world to the other. Shem En Tov Noifel Al Ha'Meisim Avish. Good oil, no matter how beautiful it smells, if it falls on a dead body, it smells like the body itself. But Shem Tov Noifel Al Ha'Meisim Ve'Eino Mavish. A good name can fall on dead people, it doesn't cause that. Shem En Tov Noifel Al Ha'Mayim V'Nidach. Good oil falls on water and it remains separate. Shem En Tov Noifel Al Ha'Mayim Ve'Eino Nidach. A good name doesn't do that. So it goes on. What's it talking about? What's the connection? Could be as well talking about chocolates. And let it say that the chocolates are not as good as a good name. And you can say all the same things about it virtually. What is it picking on oil for, and what's the Medrash trying to talk about? When it talks about Shem En Tov, you see from the next case that the Medrash brings, it's talking about the Shemen HaMishcha, the oil which was used to anoint. When it talks about Shem En Tov, it's talking about Medrash, when it talks about three names, it's talking about the second name. When the Medrash Tanchuma says a person has three names, the second name is the name given by society, that's the Shem En Tov. Shem En Tov is society anoints a man, and now he becomes called Kohen Gadol. He has a name. How did he get that name? We poured oil over him. A man, Melech, he becomes called a king. How did he become called a king? He was anointed as a king. So when the Medrash talks about Shem En Tov, and when Shlomo HaMelech in Kohelet talks about Shem En Tov, about good oil, it's talking about the name which is acquired through anointing. In other words, a name which is given to you by society, not a name which you've been able to grasp for yourself. And if we understand that, as opposed to Shem Tov, which Shem Tov is not something which is given to you by society, Shem Tov is something which you've made for yourself, then we'll begin to understand the Medrash in a completely different light, and we'll see that what the Medrash is talking about is that Shem En Tov always remains something outside of you. It never becomes integrated into you. You don't become a king. You acquire the title of king. You don't become a king. You take on the behavior of a king. You take on the dinim of a king, the laws of a king. But it's not you. You remain the same Chaimke, the same Yankele that your parents called you. That's who you are. You really want to know who you are? That's who you are. What is your position? Your position is Melech. How do you act? You act like a Melech. But it's all something which you've been given. It's something you've acquired. It's not something which is you.
Hashem Tov. That is you. It's not a title, and it's not something which you've just acquired, which you've been handed over, or something which you've taken for yourself. Hashem Tov, a good name when society talks highly of you. That's you, more than anything else. So the Medrash says, Shem Tov, Yored, the Shem Tov Oyla. Once we have this, then we can understand this is really how Maharal explains the various steps of the Medrash. Shem Tov, Yored, the Shem Tov Oyla, says the Maharal. Shem Tov, the concept of Malchus, take Malchus as an example. Royalty, kingship. It's an incredibly glorious and high concept. What a melech is. The honor of a melech, the covet of a melech, the laws of a melech. It's something tremendously high. When you give the title to a man, is that position elevated or is the position brought down? You bring it down. It was given to an ordinary man. After all, he's only a man. As long as the concept remained in the Torah and no man was the king, we just knew about the concept of a king. It was wonderful. And that's why in the time of Shmuel, all the people wanted a king. Give us a king. It sounded a wonderful concept. And Shmuel said, it sounds wonderful now, but when you've got the king, it's not going to be so easy. Then you'll start complaining and you'll want him out. It's actually a lowering of the concept once you apply it to a human being. The concept is much more pure. The concept is much more glorious when it remains theoretical. Put it into the body of an ordinary human being who eats and sleeps and drinks and makes mistakes. It loses a lot of its glamour. It loses a lot of its glory. Hashem, Shemen Tov Yoreid. The good oil, once it's applied, comes down. Shem Tov Oyla. But what is it for a good name to be applied to a person? It goes up because the good name isn't applied to the person. The good name is the person. That's a very difficult concept to understand, but hopefully as we go on you'll understand it with a little bit more clarity. The good name is the person. The person is that concept which the name describes. It's not that there's a man and we give him the good name and he bears that good name. No. The real man is his name, not the man who walks down the street. That's not the real man. That's just something, it comes and it goes, that thing walking down the street. What really were lost, what is the real mensch, what is the real human being, is off, he's walked down the street, see the face people are pulling. Are they smiling and looking at him in amazement and with glory, or are they all walking off in disgust? That will tell you who the man is. Not the man himself, not him walking down the street. So the Shem Tov is the one midah which doesn't suffer deterioration as a result of being used. All the other midas are greater in concept. The midah of kavod, honor. The midah of wealth. Talk about what an oshir is. What one can do with wealth. The greatness of wealth. The responsibility of wealth. The power of wealth. You can write books about it and people become awe-inspired. They virtually worship it. Until they see a wealthy man. Is that what wealth is? Right. And even Torah says of it, says the Maharal. Torah in its theoretical sense is sometimes so much more attractive than when you see it on an ordinary man, and he is an ordinary man who eats and sleeps like everybody else and makes mistakes and trips up sometimes, and you think it loses its glamour. Is that Torah? It's just so ordinary. It's just another man has got it. The Christians and most other religions, to avoid that happening, didn't give their equivalent of Torah to the ordinary people. They made a little god out of their one fellow who had Torah, and he's different, he's separate, he doesn't make mistakes, and you don't see him, and he disappears and comes back and just does miracles, that's all. They put the man who has the Torah right out of sight. But we don't. Everybody's supposed to have Torah. And the consequence of that, the inevitable consequence of that, is a degree of disappointment when you're exposed to Torah embodied in the ordinary man, rather than seeing it in its elevated theoretical heights. But not Shem Tov. A good name, that is the man. What do you mean you get upset when the good name is applied to the man? That is the man. That is it. That good name is the man. It suffers no deterioration when it's applied to a man. Shem Tov L'Shatov, Shem Tov L'Elo. A position, status. All the other middos which are acquired, wealth, strength, honor, dignity, integrity. Each single midah or any office given to a human being, it's l'shata. It's for a limited period of time. There comes a time when it's over. But Shem Tov L'Elo, a good name is forever. Shem Tov Kalo v'Shem Tov Eino Kalo. Good oil
it can't go on forever and ever. There's a hefsek also. You've got to stop for a moment. It's not continuous. Shem Tov is continuous. There's not a break in it. It's not it's absolutely continuous all the time. Shem Tov Bedomim, you have to invest to get Shem Tov. Whatever midah you want to refer to as Shem Tov, which is all the other midahs, any position or any status you want to acquire requires investment. You've got to put something in. Money, effort, work. You don't just become a professor overnight, you've got to work for it. You don't just become a managing director overnight, you've got to work for it. A lot of work. And likewise with all the other midas. If you want to become clever, you've got to work. If you want to become a gibber, you've got to work. If you want to develop the midah of honesty, you've got to work. But shame, so what do you do to have a good name? You don't have to do anything special. Just be a mensch. We'll see later on what needs to be done or what needs not to be done. But you don't have to work and work and work with ambition towards the Shem Tov. You won't get it if you try that. I am out to get myself a good name. That's my ambition. You'll miss it. It's one of those things that is elusive. It comes to people who aren't trying all that hard to get it. They're just being good people. That's all. So it's not with domim, you don't have to pay for it. Shem Tov Noi Bechayim. Shem Tov is only as long as you live. A position which is given to you by society, only as long as you live. Once you're dead, it's finished. Shem Tov Noig B'chayim of Amesim. A good name even after death, there it is. Shem Tov Ba'ashirim V'Shem Tov Ba'aniyim of Ashirim. Shem Tov is only with wealthy people. Wealthy doesn't mean necessarily that you've got money, but you have got to have accumulated something. How do you become a Chochem? By having acquired Chochmah. How do you become an Osher? By having acquired money. How do you become a Melech, a king? By having acquired Melucha, by having acquired the throne. But a good name, you can have nothing. Absolutely nothing. No family, no money, nothing except your body. And you can have a Shem Tov. There are no props that you need. There's no background that you need. There are no special effects that you need. Nothing. You can't be a Melech if you don't have a state. You can't be an Oshir if you don't have money. You can't be a Mechubed. You can't be an honored person if you don't have people to honor you. But a Shem Tov, a good name, you don't need anything. Just you can acquire the good name. That's all you need. Shem Tov has its geographical limitations. You're recognized in your area. There's a limitation how far you're recognized. But the Shem Tov is the whole world. Good oil can fall on water and it remains separate. The Maharal says that means that you can have a man who has all wonderful middos. He's a chochem. He's a wise man. He's knowledgeable. He is respected. Is this, is that. It doesn't become part of him. It doesn't change him. It doesn't affect him. Shem Tov is the one thing which is integrated with him. And as oil and water remain separate, so you can have people who all their great qualities somehow are separate from them. They're not part of them. But a Shem Tov, that's part of you because that is you. Shem Tov falls on a dead body and it starts to smell just like the dead body. Says the Maharal, if you start off with a man who's not a mensch, whatever he gets makes him less of a mensch, not more of a mensch. In terms of accumulation of new knowledge, more money, more status, more power, more midas, all that can be used negatively. If a man is not a mensch to start with, it can be used for detrimental. In the case of Chochmah, that's easy. If a man is not a great man, the more knowledge he has, the more dangerous he becomes. He'll use it to his own ends. And the more respect he acquires, and the more he's considered an honest man, so a man is really not an honest man. But a man is just grubby, he's not a refined person. But he has the name of an honest man. This man will never tell a lie. That's dangerous. But a man should have a name like that when he doesn't have the refinement to handle the name. That's serious. That's very damaging. That can be very dangerous. You can take oil, you can pour the best oil. If you're pouring it on a dead body, it doesn't take the smell away from the dead body. Nothing will do that. The dead body remains a dead body. But a Shem Tov, it can take the smell away from a dead body. You can have a person who's a nobody, if he develops a Shem Tov, if he develops a good name, that's not damaging. There's nothing he can do with that. There's nothing he can destroy with that. He cannot be negative with that. The good name has to be to his benefit. And so the Midrash goes on. What's in a name? We see a Shem Tov, everything's in the name. That's really what it is. It's wrong to ask what's in the name. It's not a question of how much is there in a name. The truth is everything is in the name. comes a question. So what happens if one has a bad name for unjustified? People just don't like you, have a bad name. There's a very important Gemara in Moed Kotel on Daf Yud Ches on the base, where the Gemara says the following.
Ein Adam Nechshad B'Dovar Elo Im Kein Asoy.
Firstly, you must know that there are various dinim in Halacha which are very peculiar, in that although there's nothing inherently wrong in a particular action, they are forbidden for one of two reasons. The one is Marit Ayin. Marit Ayin is, it looks wrong. But that's a different concept which we're not going to go into this evening. The second one is Chashad, because people will think you're doing wrong. An example of that is if you have two entrances to your house, one in 10th Avenue and one in Raglan Street. Comes Hanukkah, you've got to put a menorah at both of them. In case a person only sees your one entrance and it won't have a menorah there, he'll think you didn't light menorah. So the answer to that should be, who cares? What do I have to worry about? What a person walking by thinks. I did light the menorah. And I wrote the menorah at the right place and the right time, and it's a beautiful big menorah. I spent a lot of money on it. And I said, my brochas with tremendous kavon, and I learned all the dinim of Hanukkah before. And there's my menorah outside. Do I have to worry that maybe somebody's going to walk past that gate and think, huh, they didn't light a menorah? The answer is, yes, you do have to worry. And you have to put another menorah out there so that nobody will think that. Unless the two doors are in the same street where they can see, oh, this door he doesn't have it, but at that door he has. But if the one door is round the corner, you have to worry about chashad. You have to worry about being suspected of having done something wrong. There's a din that the Talmid Chacham shouldn't be out walking alone at night for various reasons, but one of the reasons is chashad. Where is he going? Where is he coming from? What's he doing alone? That's in the night time. It's not right. It looks wrong. So we see that there is a concept of chashad, of not doing things which, although inherently there's nothing wrong with it, nothing wrong in only putting the menorah in one gate, there's nothing wrong in taking a walk for the evening. The only thing wrong is with the people. They'll have silly thoughts in their minds, but for those thoughts I have to worry. And the Gemara goes much further. The Gemara says, "Ein adam nechshad b'dovar elo im kein asor." A person is only suspected by society of having done wrong if he really did wrong. Another way of saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. If people say that so-and-so has done wrong, he did wrong. V'imlay also kuloy, and if he didn't do the whole deal, also mitzasa, he did a bit of it. But where there's smoke, there's fire. Something he did. It's not possible that society will suspect a man of having done wrong, and there will be no wrong there at all. V'imlay also mitzasa, and if you say he didn't even do a bit, nothing. Hirer b'libo lasis. Maybe he didn't actually do it, but he thought about doing it. It entered his mind. Society would not think that of a person who never even entered his mind to do it. He at least thought about it. Vim lo hira b'libo lasoisa. And if he's such a tzaddik that even that never, society suspects him of having done something wrong, and it's not true, he never did it, he never did part of it, and he never thought of doing it. But still, ro acherim she'osu v'somach. He saw somebody else doing it and he thought, must be nice. Just that. But it's not possible that there was nothing of it. Something, either he's done it, or he's done part of it, or he's thought about doing it, or he saw somebody else do it and thought, very nice. But that he's completely pure from it, that he didn't do it, that he didn't think of doing it, that he didn't see anybody else doing it and take pleasure in that, then people wouldn't talk about him like that. The Gemara comes with some very sharp questions. Matthew Rabbi Yaakov asked from a pasuk in Malachim where people suspected the Emunah of doing wrong. That the people got angry at God and said about him unkind things, that he'd done things which he hadn't done. Answer the Gemara, Hosom Lahachis, that was the Uda Avu, that was just to make God angry. They knew the Emunah hadn't done it, and it was just to make them angry. What about the case with Moshe, asked the Gemara, where the Bnei Israel used to say things about Moshe? One of the things they used to say is that many things they used to say about him, but you remember the case where if he was early in the Beis HaMedrash, then they used to say, his wife threw him out. What happened at home? Why is he there so early today? Obviously he's had a fight with his wife. And if he was late there, they used to say, what kind of a leader is this? He's late for davening again. Whatever he said, they had something lazy. He's getting lazy, Moshe. What about with Moshe? Answers the Gemara, with Moshe,
Also, mishum stina who David. They did that because of stina, because they hated him. Incredible, Chazal altogether. They did that because they hated him, and that doesn't count. The Gemara learns from here that you don't have to take any notice of what people who hate you say about you. They'll always, no matter what you do, they'll say foul things about you, and that doesn't make any difference. And you don't have to take any notice about people who are saying things just to make you angry. That also you don't have to take notice of. But if neutral people, people who don't love you, don't hate you, just ordinary people in the street, say things or suspect you of having done something wrong, you must know you did it. Either you did it, or you did part of it, or you wanted to do it, or you saw somebody else do it, and you climbed nachas from somebody else doing it. But that you are in no way connected with that avera is not possible. So we see again here further confirmation of the concept that the name that a human being has got, that's the real human being. Not the way he sees himself, and not the way he would like himself to be seen, and not the way he wants his biographer to write about him, and not the way he writes about himself in his own autobiography. That's not the real human being. The real human being is the shame that he's got, is the name that he's got in society. If you want to know who you are, go and ask the person across the street, who am I? There you'll find the truth. Just an ordinary mensch in the street, that's where you'll find out who you really are, who the man is. Understand that. We can understand the story within a scene. The Nassim, when the Torah calls them Nassim, that's not just a title which has been given to them and something superficial. Nassim, that's what they are. And Nossi means a man who has been up. Decided that they wanted to wait until last for a wonderful reason. It's a tremendous gesture. A gesture of generosity and of big mindedness. They wanted to be the last to give so that they could underwrite everything that was missing. It's a wonderful thought. And we see that their name is affected by it. And what does it mean if their name is affected by it? They have changed. They are not the same as they were before. If it was just a description, and if a Torah said something and they did it, it would be bad enough. If the Torah would just have reported to us in detail, the Torah doesn't mention a thing about it, it only hints it in the way it spells their name. If the Torah would have said, and the Nassim left their donation until last because they wanted to underwrite the whole thing, spelled it out, the whole thing, that wouldn't have been as bad as changing their name. Changing their name is much more accusatory. Changing their name is much more serious. Because if the Torah merely would report to us that they did it, so they did it. But by changing their name, the Torah is reporting to us that after this they weren't the same as they were before this. Which is an amazing... What did they do that was so wrong? The answer lies in our concept of this evening. The name is the real human being. That's who the real person is. What creates the name? What gives the person his name? Can I get a name of being a tzaddik because I go around with the ambition of being a tzaddik? Can I get the name of being honest because I tell everybody, I'm an honest man, you deal with me, it's straight down the line. Are those the people who get the honest names? No, it's not. You get it after years and years and years of consistently adhering to certain principles. Then eventually the name starts building after years and years. It's an uphill struggle, it's nothing that can be acquired instantaneously. They did an interesting study. There's a certain bank in South Africa that hit on a very wonderful advertising slogan, and the other banks thought that when this bank hit on this advertising slogan, they would capitalize tremendously on it. The slogan was, "We like to be your bank," and all the staff members were wearing little lapel badges, "We like to be your bank," and it was advertised all over the place, and it had absolutely no effect whatever. As brilliant as an advertising slogan as it is, it had no effect whatever. And they made a study to try and figure out why not, so that nobody else would make the same mistake. And the reason became apparent very quickly. So you walk into the bank and you see everybody wearing, "We love to be your bank, we like to be your bank." You stand in the queue for half an hour. And when you finally finish standing in the queue for half an hour, you get there, there's this long-faced teller who deals with you and gets you out of the way and writes and writes and keeps you waiting a little bit more with a long face. And you phone up and you want some help, and you wait on the phone for half an hour.
eventually they put you through to the right person, and he doesn't really, he's not terribly interested in your business altogether. And then you say to yourself, my goodness, not only don't they like to be in my bank, but they're liars. And is that what one wants from a bank? They're liars. You don't develop a good name by wearing a lapel badge. That's not how it's done. You don't develop a shem tov by clever marketing. You don't develop a shem tov by projecting an image. Those are all temporary things. That's all shem and tov. You can get shem and tov that way. You can be accepted for a period of time. It's transitory. There's a limit to it. That can be shem and tov. You can get that way. If you've got the money to buy status, you can buy shem and tov. If you put in the effort, the work to buy it, you can buy shem and tov. If you're prepared to have something temporary, you can get shem and tov. But shem tov? No. Shem tov is by performance. And heaven help you if you slip up once. All your years of effort are gone. You can have a situation where a person works and works in a relationship, and he phones his granny up every year for her birthday, and he takes her out to tea every month, and he writes her a beautiful letter every second week, and he sends her roses for every Shabbos, and he forgets once. It's all over, all gone, all forgotten. One can put the step right, one can put one step right, one step right, all the way. One slip and the shame tov can be gone. The shame tov is built after years and years of consistent performance, and it has to be performance. When the Nesim come with this wonderful idea, and they say, we will underwrite everything, do they get a shame tov for that? No. That's not performance yet. That's like saying, we love to be your bank. We'll give you whatever we need. Come and see us. We'll be the bank that will give you the go, whatever it is. We'll put you on the wheels. We'll send you off. We'll do everything. Wonderful. That's all marketing talk. Let's see Lemaisa when it comes to it. When it comes to it, there's nothing for them to do. It's all been done already. You don't get a shame tov for having wanted to be good. You get a shame tov for doing the job. What is involved in a donation? Two things. Because we have to understand why Chazal referred to them as being lazy. What did they do lazy? There was no laziness. Okay. They didn't get the opportunity to put into practice what they wanted. That in itself is tragic enough. But why should they be called lazy? Where is there an element of laziness in what the Nesim did? What is a donation? What is a gift? There are two aspects to it, two elements. The one is the actual gift. Putting one's hand in one's pocket to take out and give to somebody else. That's the one aspect to generosity, the actual giving. But there's another equally, if not more important aspect to generosity, and that is the thought that goes into deciding what to give. That's much harder. Much harder. To give, all you need to do is to get rid of all the small-mindedness, to get rid of meanness. Then one can give more easily. But that's only half the job. The difficult job that always takes time and effort and application and open eyes and an open mind is to figure out what to give. That's the only aspect of the donation which the Nesim removed from their own donation. Wait until everybody's given and we'll give the rest. That's hatzlonus. There's a touch of laziness to that. That means you won't have to figure out what to give. You'll give everything that's missing. So while it's a tremendous gift in terms of quantity, you're offering a great deal, there's a part of your gift that's missing. There's no thought to it. You haven't given the thoughtfulness. You will not have chosen the gifts you're giving. You're simply going to give what is missing. That's not what we want. And that's a degree of atzlonus. That's a touch on their level, as much as we can understand it. A degree of withdrawnness, a degree of laziness, a degree of not putting in the thought or not being willing to put in the thought that's really necessary. What can we in the sea and give the Mishkan that nobody else could give it? So when it comes to measuring the name, that's going to be by action. Are they Nesim or aren't they? Is the word Nosi fitting to them or isn't it? The name Nosi. And it's not just a title, a meaningless title. That's what they are. That is the human being. That man is a Nosi. That's what he is. Is he a Nosi or isn't he? His shame is going to depend only on one thing, and that is his actions. What did he do? Not what did he want to do. Not what did he plan to do. Not what would he have liked to have done. He had the most wonderful idea, the most wonderful thought. But in fact, you didn't do it. And in your donation eventually, while there was a lot of money, there was no thought. So when we look at your donation, it will always be the thoughtless donation. The big money, the big plaque over there, that's what the Nassim gave. Not the little things that the other people gave. This for this place and that for that place. Thoughtful little things, but each thing had machshava behind it. Each thing had thought behind it. So a letter comes out of their name. But it's strange that nobody comments. Two letters, in fact, have come out of their name. There are two yuds in the word Nassim. There's one between the sin and the aleph, and there's one between the aleph and the mem. And they're both out. So it's not one letter that comes out, it's two letters that come out. Why two? So we see it's not just that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to contract their name. It's he didn't want the letter yud in the name. That's even more distressful. It's bad enough when instead of just saying A did wrong, the Torah changes his name. That means that his essence has been changed, he's no longer the same person. That's bad enough. But in what way does the Torah change the name? Removes the yud. Every yud, the first yud, the second yud, all yud, I don't want yud in his name. Because yud isn't my name, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't want any kind of connection, no recognition, nothing shared between his name and my name. What a frightful thing that is. So Banishman comes and writes your name, takes out the youth. Doesn't want it there. Imagine what it is. I mean, just imagine a situation where you go to somebody great, somebody that you respect, and he says, what is your name? And you say, my name is Shmerel. And he writes Shmerel without the N. Cheryl, he writes. And you say, no, not Cheryl. Cheryl is the girl's name. My name is Shmerel. He says, yes, I heard. You say, but you wrote it incorrectly. Would you mind writing it again? He says, all right, you write it again. Without the M. Cheryl. He said, but why? Why no M? Why don't you spell it with an M? S-H-M-E. I heard you. I'll write it again for you. And he writes Cheryl. I say, what's going on? Imagine you went to a great, God will be Israel, one of these great people, and you want a bracha from him. And he's writing down your name. He writes Cheryl. Three times, Cheryl, he writes. And you say, why no mem? Why no m? He says, because there's an m in my name. So he says, now we've got patents on letters now. It's in your name, so it can't be in my name. He says, look, would you mind if I just don't want to share anything with you? I don't want a letter to be in your name and my name the same. You want me to make a bracha for you? I'll make, but do me a favor, it's Cheryl, not Shmerel. The m, I'm not prepared to share the m with you. What a shock! The Ribbono Shel Olam takes the yud out of Nasi. I'm not prepared to share the yud with you. Why? Because generosity, to give, you don't have to be a human being. An animal also gives. It's inherent within animal nature even to give. A mother animal gives to its children. A bird builds a nest for its family. They go out and they get these worms and they take them off to their families. Animals also know how to give. You don't have to be a human being to give. What you need to be a human being to do is only to decide what to give. To give is no big godless. A person who doesn't give is subhuman. A person who doesn't give is sub-animal. It's not even animal. Animals will even give their situations where animals will even give not only to their own families. There's a certain amount of chesed that the different animals know how to do and they're each in their own way. They know how to help each other out also. One animal can help another one out. That's not, you don't have to be a human being for that. You don't have to be a mensch for that. You don't even have to be, you can be an animal for that. And if you can't do that, you're beneath the level of an animal. So what is godly about chesed? And chesed is one of the most godly of all midas. It's not just that you give. And it's not how much you give. The only thing that is godly about giving is the amount of thought that went into what you gave. That's all that's human, that's all that's special, that's all that's godly. When the Nassim give a gift without the thought, as big as it is, millions, and they were prepared to give still more millions. They were prepared to give everything. The one thing they weren't prepared to give, and that was the effort to figure out what was the best thing for them to give. And for that, the Ribbono Shel Olam removes the youth. Then you're not a match. That's not a human being. But that which discriminates a human being from an animal in his giving is the thoughtfulness that goes into the giving. Where there's no thoughtfulness, that's not the same. And there can't be a youth in your name. The Ribbono Shel Olam removes it. And the name is the human being. When the yud is taken out of the name, the yud is taken out of the human being. The yud has no right to be with a human being at that stage. The Ribbono Shel Olam isn't prepared to accept it.
That's what a Shem Tov is. A Shem Tov is something which is developed through many years of actions, of doing, not of wanting to do, planning to do, scheming to do, hoping to do. That doesn't give a Shem Tov. A Shem Tov cannot be purchased. A Shem Tov cannot be picked up. A Shem Tov cannot be granted to you. A Shem Tov is the consequence of many years of consistently doing good things. And doing good things in what area particularly? In the area of thoughtfulness. That's the particular area in which the Shem Tov is developed. Where a human being, you don't get a Shem Tov just by giving money. You don't get a Shem Tov. So you'll be given, you'll be talked about as being a nadvan, as being a good donor. But that's not what Shem Tov means. Shem Tov means you're a good person. Shem Tov is an all-round term. For that you're not going to get a Shem Tov. But if each time you give, you're giving with thoughtfulness. If each time you give, you're giving of yourself a little bit. If each time you're giving, you hit the nail on the head. You give exactly right, to the right place, at the right time, in the right way. Consistently, time after time. Giving financially. Giving materially. Giving emotionally. Giving spiritually. Giving intellectually. Each time, just right. That's how, after a long period of time, one begins to develop a Shem Tov. And that Shem Tov, the Ribbono Shel Olam participates in. And the moment that Shem Tov doesn't exist, the moment the Ribbono Shel Olam feels that despite all the most wonderful intentions, it doesn't come through to practice, and in the actions there's something missing, particularly the thoughtfulness is missing, then the Ribbono Shel Olam removes his name from it. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want to share the Yud anymore with the individual. A human being who says, I don't care what society thinks of me, is basically saying, I don't care who I am. I don't care what I am. He doesn't realize that what society thinks of him is the most accurate measure of who he is. And if you ask your society or their opinion on a particular man, they won't say he's frum. That's not the answer you'll get. What do you think of so-and-so? He's a shomer shabbos. Won't say that. What do you think of so-and-so? He's very careful about kashrus. That's not the way society answers. What do you think of so-and-so? Society will pull a face. Or they'll say, not bad. Or they'll say, fantastic person. Without getting into any details, you don't need anything more than that. But that is who the person really is. Society is unbelievably critical. They're cruel, they're harsh. If there's anything that isn't right, they'll pick on it. They'll take great delight in picking on that. And that's why the Shem Tov is the greatest test of who one really is. It's not a mensch, which is much more important to know than to know how religious one is. Much more important to know than to know how generous one is, how honest one is. Taking all the things on their own, it's much more important to know what kind of a Shem have I got. Have I got a Shem Tov or have I got a Shem Ra? Do I generally have a good name or a bad name? That's all that's really important in the long run, because that's who you are. That's the real person. That there shouldn't be a change where the Ribbono Shel Olam isn't prepared to share his shame, his name with our name. The understanding of that doesn't mean chas v'sholem that one starts putting on a front for society, that one starts behaving towards society, one starts acting it out in order that one should develop a good name. Number one, that's not possible, because the name you'll then get is a good actor. It was found, there was a young man in Slabodka Yeshiva many years ago who passed away as a very young man, and they found his diary and they published it. It was just some beautiful things. He'd never shown it to anyone. They just little thoughts that he'd wrote to himself, and I remember seeing it when I was a boy, and I still got it, and being very, very moved. It changed my life, many things over there. And one of the things in there was just this point: if a human being realized how much society know about him, he would be too afraid to walk out in the street. We don't realize that. We think we've been successful in hiding ourselves. We think we've been successful in selling ourselves and projecting ourselves. It's not like that. People see right through it. They're not the enemies. We don't have to talk about the enemies. We can ignore them. It's the ordinary people. People can see a lot more than one thinks. And when people in the street refer to a person as with a Shem Tov, when a person has a good name, that's something which is valuable, which the Torah values almost more than anything else. Tov Shem Mishem Tov. A good name is greater than being a Kohen Gadol, being a Melech, anything which one is anointed. All the Kedusha of a Kohen Gadol,
the Kohen Gadol who can go into the Kodesh Kodoshim, the Kohen Gadol who can be Mechaper, who can atone for all the sins of the whole of Klal Yisrael, the Kohen Gadol who does the Avodah on Yom Kippur, who does all the Yom Kippur service, the Kohen Gadol who is chosen above all else, all everybody else, for the highest levels of Tara, of spiritual purity. Toiv Shem Mishem and Toiv. The man with a good name is greater. The man with a good name is more valuable and more precious to the Ribbono Shel than even a Kohen Gadol, than even a Melech, he who is given that status externally. But that status is not a definition of him. Shem Tov is a definition of the human being, and it's something which requires a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of time, particularly in figuring out, as Boris Hazrachi said this afternoon, the thoughtfulness of Musa. That every action has a cheshbon behind it, that every action is figured out, that one doesn't do anything just so. Everything one has thought out, that's the way it has to be, that's the correct way. One might make a mistake in the figuring out, but there's nothing which is done that isn't figured out. It's all done with thoughtfulness. It all has machshava behind it. It all has an idea behind it, a concept behind it, direction behind it. Then there's a chance of the nesiim in each of us remains being spelt with the Yud, with the Ribbono Shel Olam's participation.